Welcome to the Fantasy NASCAR Podcast. I am Pierce Dietrich. The podcast is brought to you by FanVice.com. Check it out for daily fantasy sports stuff. Not going to sugarcoat it. This week's podcast is about Pocono. This is a race that most of you are not even going to watch, let alone listen to a podcast that talks about Pocono. So I'm going to assume that I'm talking to about six people, which probably isn't much different than the 12 or 13 people that I normally talk to. I know I've talked about, hey, we're getting up on PageRank, we're moving up with the podcast. That's true. But that still means we only have 13 people listening. This is NASCAR we're talking about, folks. Not the most popular sport around. Not even really close to the most popular. Anyway, don't want to start the podcast out by destroying NASCAR and Pocono, but it's going to be hard to avoid that. This week, the Xfinity Series will be using the All-Star Restrictor Plate Package. Not sure what to expect. I could go back and watch the Indianapolis Xfinity race from last year, but that ain't happening. I know people have said that that race was better, but Indianapolis is terrible. And even if they made the racing a little bit better, which I imagine the Pocono racing will be a little bit better, and there, I don't know if they used a restrictor plate last year. I know they used the high downforce spoiler and they used the ducks on the front of the car. Wasn't sure if they did a plate. If they did, cool. You just wait till practice. We'll watch practice and we'll see what's going to happen. It's not going to be this miracle cure. The racing should be fine. Maybe it brings the cars a little bit closer together. One thing about Charlotte with the All-Star race package, it was pretty cool, but the downside is you don't have really long straightaways to really suck up to somebody and make a run, and you really, it's kind of tricky to do that in the tri-oval. But at a place like Pocono or Indianapolis, you do have these really long straight stretches where you and a trailing car can work together, or maybe you can just suck up to the car in front of you on your own and be able to just get a rush and do like a slingshot engage into the corner. I don't know. That being said, I don't really want to talk about the Xfinity race not knowing what's going to happen. The cars that are good are probably going to be good. The cars that have been average are going to be average. Maybe there's more wrecks. Maybe cars 10 through 20 or 10 through 25 will be closer together. I still believe we're going to get a cup driver or running, and that guy is going to run away with the race. And we saw that in the All-Star race. He kind of got some moves on the leader, but once Kevin Harvick got going, no one was catching him. When Kyle Busch got going, no one was catching him. I believe Martin Truex Jr. also led one of those stages. One of the things that we kind of glance over with how awesome the All-Star Race package was the fact that there was four stages, and they kept resetting the field, and then that led to lead changes. If that would have been a regular race without a bunch of stages, or just your typical stage length of 100 laps, you run 100 laps of that, you probably get one guy who runs out front for the entire 100 laps. Didn't see a lot of moves being made on the leader. I'm sorry. Not to say that I didn't like the All-Star package. I loved it. But we're not quite there yet. We're moving in the right direction. Sure, we'll figure something out. The Cup race will not have that package. And we will see some classic lap turning. And as I mentioned, I like the All-Star race. And to go from the All-Star race to what we saw in the Coca-Cola 600, that was pretty rough. That was brutal to watch. And then we get back to the old argument of, well, you're not a traditional real fan, where back when Petty used to lead. Yeah, I'm not. I'm just not. I'm sorry. If that upsets you, that I don't bleed old school NASCAR, sometimes I want to see some passing of the leaders. Sometimes I want to see some action. And you know what? If NASCAR has to throw some debris cautions to make it happen, then so be it. Now, sometimes it's a little too far. You watch that Xfinity race, the Charlotte Xfinity race. I mean, we're coming through the last turn and you throw a debris caution. I think everybody was going to miss that. I know there was a steal on the track, but it was a big enough chunk that, hey, we got one more lap. Hey, everybody watch out. Don't run into the metal. The crazy thing is, like, hey, you throw the debris caution at the end because you want to protect people and keep them safe. What are you talking about? You throw a debris caution and you cause a green-white shootout finish. What the hell do you think is about to happen? You're not going to make things safe. You're going to create a wreck. And sure enough, Tyler Reddick wrecked for the 16th time and the 35th time on the season. Tyler Reddick is Ricky Stenhouse Jr. Make no mistake about it. at the end of the year, he's not going to be in a junior motorsports car. He is destroying cars and basically setting fire to Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s wallet. We often think like, hey, these teams got money. It's not a big deal. Are you kidding me? Roush almost got rid of Ricky Stenhouse, and that was during the boom times when Roush had money. There is no way Junior is going to continue to let Tyler Reddick ridiculously, almost did something there, just destroy race cars. He's out of control, and I know people love to praise him. Yeah, well, he's really pushing the cars. You don't really have to do that. Justin Allgaier, he's doing all right. Elliott Sadler, doing just fine in those cars. Hell, even Michael Annett is doing just fine getting the race car home. Tyler Reddick is out of control, destroying cars. He had no business being on that track anyway. He was plenty of laps down. He was not in contention. Usually, the rule of thumb is, hey, if you're 10 laps off the pace and there's only 10 laps left, you park the car. There's no point in being out there. You can't gain or lose a position. Either way, whatever, Tyler Reddick. Destroying some race cars. Getting off on a tangent there. But Poconos this week, it is a lap turner. Just get used to it, though. This is the moment where the summer schedule at NASCAR hits. It used to be even worse. You used to get, okay, here comes the summer schedule and the TNT broadcast. I don't know if the TNT broadcasting was that bad, or it was just that TNT got these sucker races. So we kick off the summer series with Pocono, terrible race. Michigan, terrible race. Sonoma's fine. It's a road course, but I'm kind of getting worn out on the road courses as well. They're fine, but really once they get going, there's not a lot of passing. And I did the podcast on this last year. Actually, Sonoma was fine until last year. They've killed these road course races with the stages. The stages have screwed up the race. It used to be a very interesting race, how you approached it, where you would pit, where you wouldn't pit. That's gone because they just have, you know. Stages are okay. I'm not so anti-stage anymore. I like stages in the truck series. I like the stage idea in the Xfinity series. I don't believe that the Cup series needs stages. I know that they absolutely should say, we're not going to run stages in the road courses. We're not going to do it. Maybe one at the most. Everyone knows that they created the stages to break up the race, to get restarts, to make it more exciting. You don't want that in a road course. In a road course, we don't want them to, all right, reset the field. One of the cool things about a road course is that people get on all these different strategies, and you will see a guy pull away and really just outrace the field, not necessarily having the best machine and being in clean air, but just simply hitting every turn. That was the beauty of road racing. That's what made it awesome, and they have totally killed that. The road course sucked last year. Just were terrible, and it's because of the stupid stages. I'll deal with the stages in the other tracks, even though, you know, I don't think they should be in the Cup Series. It's not much different than the damn caution clock, people. The caution clock was a joke that everyone made fun of. But NASCAR knew, hey, let's just do this in the Truck Series. Let's just leave this in the lower series. No one's going to be cool with it in the Cup Series. Well, we basically have the caution clock in the Cup Series now. Anyway, so you got Pocono, Michigan, Sonoma, Chicagoland is now in the summer, and Chicagoland is absolutely terrible. No one watches that race. Now, no one watched it before because it was a terrible race and it was in the middle of football season, but now when it's going up against baseball, it's still going to lose. Now, maybe they'll put a plate on the track, but I don't think they're going to use the All-Star package. We'll talk about that in a second. Daytona's fine. It is what it is. Kentucky is terrible. Just terrible. It's terrible. It's a bad racetrack. Oh, my God. New Hampshire is an awful racetrack. Thank God they only went down to one at New Hampshire, but we still have to watch one miserable New Hampshire race. Then back to Pocono, if one time at Pocono wasn't enough. Watkins Glen, hey, it used to be a fun racetrack until the stages killed it. And then again, back to Michigan. People will hate me, but maybe not. A lot of people listening to this probably agree with me, but put the plates on all of them. All of them. Just maybe not the road courses, obviously. You really don't need to do that. You should get rid of the stages in those. But Pocono, Michigan, Chicagoland, Daytona's already got a plate, but I believe they should, and this is what Harvick said, put this plate package on the cars at Daytona. it'll make them race better because the cars that they're using now with that really low spoiler is going to lead to lap turning single file. Maybe not. Maybe the guys will all lose their minds again, but it looks like at the last racetrack we saw at Talladega, they're just going to take it easy. Put a big spoiler on them and make the cars more racy so you can pass people. Passing just was not happening at Talladega. It probably won't change anything. Kentucky, absolutely. New Hampshire, I don't know if it would do anything at New Hampshire. I've heard people mention it. They've tried everything else at New Hampshire. They've basically lathered the thing in the VHT last year. Didn't really help. Why not? I don't know if it would really work at that track, but whatever. You know, I'm willing to try anything. Then Pocono again, use it, and Michigan again, maybe. I don't know. I just not excited about the summer swing. I'm sorry. We could use some short tracks. We absolutely could. We could use just anything. Right. So let's talk a little bit about Pocono. That's the reason you're here. Last year at Pocono, Kyle Busch was the fastest in the second Pocono race. Just so much better than everybody else. I'm pretty sure he started on the pole or was pretty close to it, and he ran away with the race. That was it. End of story. Busch was fast. Truex was fast. Nothing really new. If we look at the stats here, yeah, Kyle Busch started on the pole. He finished the race. There was a time where he gave up the lead, but he had fresh tires. Well, I think he actually passed some cars that were on fresh tires, but I don't know. Kyle Busch, first to first. Martin Truex Jr., third to second. Brad Keselowski, 11th to fifth. I was looking at this backwards. I'm sorry. Truex went from second to third. Your hog was Kyle Busch. Your second hog was Martin Truex Jr. That's really not a surprise. If you guys go back in time to last year, it was Busch, it was Truex. Larson had a great year, but Larson has never been good at Pocono, at least as far as I know. He doesn't have a lot of experience. I remember he ran a couple ARCA races just to get used to the shifting coming out of turn one. He might have won that ARCA race, but that's, you know, kind of a meaningless story. It's a little different. It's good that he got to practice. Those names really aren't from... Brett Keselowski's always been pretty good at this racetrack. You got Kevin Harvick, he finished second. Not a really big deal. Hamlin finishes fourth. Runt starts fourth, finishes fourth. The interesting thing there is Denny Hamlin, this is probably what you need to wrap your mind around as you're making your Pocono picks this week. So Denny Hamlin scores the fifth most fantasy points. He starts fourth, he finishes fourth, and he only gets... Well, he did get 3 fast lap points and 4.5 lap sled points. Halfway decent number of points there, hog points, 7.5. But, you know, at another track, that wouldn't matter. 7.5 hog points would be okay, but you would expect some place differential. But at Pocono, where there's not very many laps, those little teeny bits of hog scraps are going to make a huge difference. I mean, Hamlin only scored 47.5 points there. Really got to change the way that you make your picks. We've had a lot of short tracks recently where we love the hog points and we love the place differential, and it's just not necessarily going to happen. Sure, we'd love to get some place differential here, but I don't know if it's really going to happen the way this thing turns into a lap turn, unless someone really has a terrible qualifying effort. Sure, but I don't know if I want to go really out there. If I look at the top 10 fantasy-wise, the best place differential guy is Dale Earnhardt Jr., who scored the 7th most fantasy points. He got 11 place differential points. He drove from 23rd to 12th. He got the job done. That's not bad. Then 10th place, Ty Dillon, drove from 30th to 17th. And we saw that a lot last year from Ty Dillon, going from about 30th to around 20th. His average running position was 21st. I don't mind taking a shot at one of those guys that are around the $5,000, $6,000 range. Reading out the top 10, Busch, Truex, Keselowski, Harvick, Hamlin, Kenseth. Really not names that would be surprising last year when we're talking speed. And really, that's all it is. When we talk about Pocono, it's, you know, who's got the best car, who's got track position. It's not a skillful race. You just can't pass. It is so hard to pass. We see a lot of fuel mileage games. We see pit road strategies come into play. But even still, I don't know if that's going to be a big deal now with the stages broken up. You're all going to kind of end up on the same fuel strategy or the same plan, because we're not going to get a huge green flag run to end the race, because there are stages. Stenhouse with the 11th most fantasy points. He goes from 21st to 16th. Suarez, 8 to 7. Elliott, 13 to 10. Kane, 12 to 11. Not really big movers and shakers. Kurt Busch, Newman, Patrick, Menard, Reagan, Austin Dillon. Those are your top 20 for the Pocono race. We had five cautions in this race. A 60-lap green flag run to end the thing. The cautions were, you had a caution on lap one, took a couple people out. You had the two stages, and then you had a debris caution. And there might have been one real wreck in there, too. What I'm more interested in with Pocono is to look at practice and see if our practice speeds line up with the finishing position. We're really average running position, also hog points for Pocono. At Pocono, we're not going to get long runs. There might be a couple drivers that go out and make a long run, but it's pretty rare. As I'm looking here, that I've got about four cars in practice two that went out and attempted a long run. Now two of those were Kyle Busch and Brad Keselowski, and there's a significant difference in speed between the two. But for the most part, we're going to be looking at single lap runs. Why does that matter? Well, I mean, one of the nice things is we can look at five-lap runs this week and find out who we like on a five-lap run. That probably will give us some pretty good information, I believe, to see someone who can consistently repeat a fast speed. But when you're at a track where it's almost impossible to pass, once you get out front, you're gone. It's all about track position from that point onward. Just about getting good restarts, especially at Pocono, where you're diving into turn one like a madman. Anyway, Kyle Busch, he ran a 10-lap run, and he was the fastest. You got to be careful with that because there was only four cars running long runs. But on the short run in practice two, he was also the fastest, and he went on to run the most hog points, or score the most hog points. Second would be Martin Truex Jr., and you'll see his speed and say, well, he's seventh in practice one, he's seventh in practice two. But maybe more important is he started second. He started on the front row, gave him either through pit strategy. I would have to go back and watch the race and find out when exactly he got the hog points. But, you know, it's starting position might be a bigger deal. And we'll look as we go through the trends. Is it practice matter? Is it more about current form? Obviously, these names are drivers that have been really good. Is it track history? When we look at the next guy, which is Brad Keselowski, decent speed in practice, but they don't really jump out at you. And his starting position was 11th. There's a place where you could say, hey, that's a good amount of place differential points, and I can definitely take advantage of that. But he wasn't all that great last year. He had okay speed at times. But he does have track history. He's won here a couple times. Almost won here a couple times as well. Kevin Harvick, he was starting to warm up a little bit, but again, his practice speed's not that great. Started sixth. Denny Hamlin, he did run the fourth fastest in practice two. He started fourth. His average running position was seventh. All of these guys have a top 10 average running position. Matt Kenseth, first in practice one, 16th in practice two. Another interesting thing about this race, and I just forgot, but I just remembered on the top of my head, is that if I'm correct, I believe this race was a stupid qualify on Sunday race on Sunday race. Now, we look back and say, God, that's so stupid. Why are you qualifying race on the same day? What a pain for daily fantasy NASCAR players. Meanwhile, on Saturdays, we do the same damn thing every week. We are slaves to watching qualifying and then having 2 hours to jam research and jam in your lineup. So, can't really complain about the 1 day or the 2 day shows anymore. It's been coming kind of normal. Junior was not fast in practice whatsoever, and his average running position was 18th. He finished a lot better than where he started. The practices look okay. Maybe starting position is probably, if I look at DFS wise, let's just look at start, let's forget practice, let's just look at starting position. Busch starts first, most fantasy points. Truex starts second, second most fantasy points. Keselowski, 11th. Harvick, 6th. Hamlin, 4th. Kenseth, 15th. Junior, 23rd. Jones, 9th. Bowyer, 7th. Ty Dillon, 30th. So, 7 of those 10 top 10 scores started 11th or better. And if you listen to the podcast for any amount of time, usually, yeah, everyone finishes near the top 10 or top 15, but typically we've only got 3-4 drivers, 5 drivers at the most that start the race inside the top 10. But in this case, we've got 7 drivers starting the race 11th or better and having big fantasy scores. That tells me that this is a hard track to pass at. And if it's hard to pass, it's hard to lose positions. Starting position is going to be a big, big deal for me at least. But let's look at some more trends and we'll see what else as we go through here. I mean, yeah, if you look at the spreadsheet here, you're going to see guys that were top 10, top 15, top 20 in practice. And then as you go down, you're going to see a lot slower in practice. And then some of the guys got caught in that early race wreck. Nothing you can do about that one. And have other issues. But I think starting position is definitely going to be something I look at. We'll look at, let's look at the Pocono 2017. I'm sorry if I'm not really excited about this. It's Pocono. It's not a good race. And they're not going to roll that restrictor plate package out in less than a couple days. It's not happening. And we've just got to deal with it. And I mean, the way I'm approaching it is just give me the guys up front. And hopefully they'll hold on to position. Pocono in the spring, Kyle Busch also pretty much, I would say, dominates. And you know I don't like to use that word. And you know I like to say that I don't like to use that word. He was in control the entire race. Absolutely. And then at the end, with 12 laps to go, we get a caution. And that pretty much sealed the deal for Kyle Busch. He really couldn't win after that. He could pit with 12 laps remaining. And then at least 3 or 4 cars. There's no guarantee that the cars in 2nd, 3rd, or 4th would stay on the track. But enough cars are going to stay out on the track that Kyle Busch is going to have to storm through the field at Pocono with 12 laps left. Probably not going to happen. It's impossible. So the next option is, well, I guess he stays out. But if the leader stays out, then everyone behind the leader goes in and gets fresh tires. And that's exactly what happens. So Kyle Busch decides, all right, I'm going to stay out and just hope that I can pull some miracle out or run this car faster than it's capable of running with old tires. Meanwhile, Blaney and Harvick and the whole crew go get tires. They come out on fresh tires. And Busch does a pretty good job of trying to hold off Blaney. He fights pretty hard. But, kind of bumping into him, door slamming him a little bit. And if you're a Kyle Busch hater, I'm sure that that gave you some fuel to your fire, but Kyle Busch didn't do anything wrong in that situation. Ryan Blaney gets by him, and he holds off Kevin Harvick, which, yeah, this year that's amazing. And I know they gave Ryan Blaney a ton of credit for holding off Kevin Harvick last year, but Kevin Harvick won 0 races. I mean, I'm sure he won at Sonoma, but he hadn't even won at Sonoma at that point. Kevin Harvick was not that strong last year. Those Fords were not ready to be dominant. You know, they're still working on that new body that they were adjusting to at SHR. Either way, not to throw any shade on Ryan Blaney, he wins the race. But that late race caution pretty much handed him the race. Otherwise, it was all Kyle Busch. 17 fast lap points, 25 laps led points. He led 100 laps of a 160-lap race. That's very, very impressive. He ends up finishing 9th as his tires wear out. But he still ends up scoring the most fantasy points. Eric Jones with the 2nd most. He starts 15th. He finishes 3rd. I'm interested to see what his practice totals were. I believe I just mentioned he got a top 10 in both Pocono races last year. Chase Elliott finishes 8th. A couple years, was it 2016 where Elliott? Yeah, that's right. It was Elliott and Elliott and Larson at Pocono in 2016 battling for the lead towards the end of the race, and they're slamming into each other. And Kurt Busch ends up sliding right by him. And that's all she wrote. Kurt Busch pulls away, and we already mentioned how hard it is to pass the leader. He ends up getting the win, but Chase Elliott's been good here. I don't know. I mean, I could probably trust Chase Elliott this week if they're cheating again. And come on, folks. We all know that the Chevys were cheating last week, and that's okay. It's not a problem. Why not? If you are getting it handed to you every single week, you better go out there and cheat. We've already seen Chase Elliott got busted cheating at Texas. Chase Elliott got busted cheating last year at Chicago. And now I'm sure a lot of people are quick to say that, man, why are they always busting Chase Elliott? Why are they always going after him? I don't know if that's really the case, guys. I don't think that anyone gets attacked more than anyone else. Everyone is hated in NASCAR. For every fan you have an enemy. And I don't think anyone is any more hated. Now, I'm sure the Kyle Busch fans will say Kyle Busch is probably hated more. And probably a little bit to that. But there's also a little bit of a reason to that. Maybe he's hated less anymore. But Anyway, Erik Jones, Chase Elliott, Kevin Harvick again with another performance of second place. Finished second in both of the Pocono races. I already mentioned that, by the way. He started 12th, finishes second. Chase Elliott started 25th, finishes 8th. I'd like to see practice, because when I see Chase Elliott starting 25th in last year's Chevy, sounds like a lock to me. And even Erik Jones, probably a little early to say that he would have been locked. Now this year, if you get Erik Jones at 15th, $8,000 range, you'd be pretty happy with that. Ryan Blaney starts 4th, finishes 1st. Again, it's another top 5 driver, end up with a top 5 fantasy day. I wonder what the accuracy of that is. Probably definitely want to look at the first two rows when you're looking for your hogs and also your top fantasy scores. And Ryan Blaney did not. He started 4th. He won the race, but he only had 2.5 fast lap points, 2.5 laps led points. He didn't score a bunch of hog points, but yet he still had a top 5 fantasy score, which makes me want to roster some of these guys starting in the front. Ricky Stenhouse Jr., he had 12th most fantasy points in the fall race. Here he is with the 6th most fantasy points, driving from 23rd to 11th. His average running position was 16th, so he wasn't that far off of that. Obviously, he benefited from that last caution towards the end, which makes, when you go back to that fall race and you see Dan Hart Jr. run from, pretty much he did the same thing to get into a top 10 DFS score. He started, I believe, 23rd and ended up 12th. But with Junior, what's interesting is there wasn't a late race caution. As I mentioned, that fall race, he ran, we finished it with a 60-lap green flag run. I wonder if maybe he skipped a pit, maybe he ran a fuel mileage situation. I am not sure, but I don't know. I'm sorry, I can't sit here and tell you that I remember all these Pocono races, because I hate them. They're boring. These are usually the races where I'm already working on the spreadsheet for next week and the race is on in the corner, because it's absolute lap turning. Martin Truex Jr., 2nd to 6th, 10 fast lap points, 1.25 laps led points. There's Kozlowski again inside the top 10. Likes this racetrack. He really does. 6th to 5th. And you know, I know a lot of times we worry about rostering Brad Kozlowski because the car just doesn't have a lot of speed, but the car didn't have a lot of speed last year. But still, Kozlowski put together pretty good performances at Pocono. I can get on board with Kozlowski this week. Kyle Larson, there's the guy I was talking about. He did get 6.75 hog points, 7th to 7th, but that's really not that exciting. I don't know if this is necessarily a Kyle Larson track. Kurt Busch, 5th to 4th. He's been pretty good here. And then we got Denny Hamlin, 18th to 12th. Danica Patrick again. She had 2 good races last year. So maybe Eric Almirola, but you know the story of Almirola. He just has to qualify in the 20s. If he doesn't, he's just too much negative place differential for the 10 car. Buescher, 29th to 19th. He got that goofy win a couple years ago. Austin Dillon, 17th, 13th. If I look at the top 10, and we see how many cars start inside the top 10. You got 6 cars starting inside the top 10. That's on the high side, folks, where usually 3 or 4 cars start inside the top 10 and have a top 10 daily fantasy score. That's 6. That is a lap turner. And, you know, normally I caution, hey, be careful with how many of these cars you put starting inside the top 10, because they cannot score points. Their upside is limited. Well, Pocono itself just simply limits upside. There's only 160 laps. Hog points are gone. That, when you take those points out, it then means that finishing position points weigh heavier in the end. And, I mean, place differential is always going to be there, but it's not when you go to a lap-turning racetrack. Of course, if you get Denny Hamlin starting 33rd, you lock him in. But A.J. Allmendinger starting 29th to 30th is not a lock, especially if this thing just turns into a lap-turner and he finishes 25th. Whereas you were better off if you played Chris Buescher starting 18th and he finishes 18th. I'm just guessing, number-wise. I think that would work. 9 cars finish inside the top 10. Your range, and this is the number to hang on to. What do you think the most fantasy points was in that spring race last year with Kyle Busch? 69. That is very low. That's very much like what we see at Daytona and Talladega in terms of points. But don't confuse that with this racetrack. We're not going to chase place differential. We're not going to play guys in the back. There's not going to be a crazy wrecks that change the race. It's just simply the guys up front run up front. one punt came through, you had one sub-8K driver inside the top 10, and you really had just one hog. One hog that got all of those points. That was Kyle Busch with 42. You can throw Eric Jones with 12 hog scraps, Chase Elliott with 7 hog scraps, and that was, it's not bad. 11 for Martin Truex Jr. But if you get negative place differential points, then it just sucks that right away. That's the other problem with, you get the hog scraps at this track, kind of are excited because, hey, it's 7 points. That's a big deal at this racetrack. We just said that 69 is the upside. So that's 10% of the points. That's a pretty good number. But negative place differential then becomes an even bigger monster at this racetrack as well. And that's, you know, doable because the guys that can probably get you hog points are the guys that are probably starting towards first place, and the guys that can probably score negative place differential are the guys that are probably starting near first place. That's just the way that it works. That's the danger that you run into. And you look at a guy like Martin Truex Jr., who did get those 11 hog points, but when he starts second and finishes sixth, four of those sucked right out. Interesting. If we look at practice, and again, you're not going to see, I think we had 7 cars that made a long run. Again, in the Slack chat, we'll probably look over 5 lap runs and have a decent idea of who's fast and see if there's any difference between the cars. But my initial thought is starting positions, what matters. All right, so Kyle Busch, second and then first on your short runs. Probably going to go ahead and lock in old Kyle Busch right now. We look at Eric Jones, 22nd, 13. Not really good practice speeds. Not really exciting me. He was $8,300. He started 15th. But hey, he had something there. You look at Chase Elliott, and the question was Chase Elliott going to be chalk at 25th? And the answer is yes, because in practice 2, 4th fastest. Kevin Harvick starts 12th, 4th fastest on the short run, 5th fastest on the short run, 1st fastest on the long run. But again, Kyle Busch didn't even make a long run effort. Martin Truex Jr. didn't make a long run effort. So I don't care about your 10 lap runs. I mean, it's nice. He probably feels pretty comfortable with this car, but it's really nothing to compare it to. Ryan Blaney, 7th on the short run in practice 1. Ricky Stenhouse Jr., not fast at all in practice. But, I mean, he was 23rd. I mean, you look at practice 2, Ricky Stenhouse was 23rd. Where did he qualify? 23rd. Where did he run most of the race? 16th. So he ran a little bit better. I don't know. Martin Truex Jr., not fast in practice, 12th and 15th. Brett Keselowski, 6th and 2nd. Kyle Larson, 1st and 3rd. I like practice this week, but I got to make sure that I don't believe in it too much. Personally, I just want to trust current form and track history. If you've been good at Pocono, then I believe you'll be fine this week. If you've run well this year, I believe you'll be good. I don't have to see top 5 speeds. I don't have to see elite speed. I will look at your 5 lap runs and see what that tells me. Maybe we'll find something in there. Again, that's going to be tough because I can't look at the 5 lap runs from the past. All I'll have is the 5 lap runs from this year in the vacuum, and that might be misleading. Again, you got guys like Ricky Stenhouse Jr. who just get position and they hold on to it, apparently, or they just have a good restart and they hold on. I do believe that going in, I want to favor guys starting up towards the front. I mean, you look, here's their top 10. There's going to be a couple guys like Jones, Elliott, Harvick. They start outside the top 10. And then you got Stenhouse as well. But then if I read the next 6 of the 11 drivers in the top 10 DFS-wise have a start 1st, 4th, 2nd, 6th, 7th, and 5th. Definitely leaning to, I can't build all my guys up, but I'm going to have more. Maybe in the past, I only wanted 2 to 3 guys starting in the side top 10. I may be crazy enough to roster 4 guys. But I look at these prices, and all of these guys that are starting inside the top 10 are all expensive. Kyle Busch, $9,700, which is kind of cheap when we think about it now. Ryan Blaney, $8,400. It's a decent deal. Keselowski, $10,000. Truex, starting 12th, Truex starting second, 10,000. Kyle Larson starting seventh, 9,900. Is there any cheap guys that started inside the top 10? Matt Kenseth starting third at 9,000. That's kind of appealing if you're trying to save, but you did have to worry, like, he's just going to slide backwards, and that's what he did. He ended up finishing 10th, and those negative place differential points pretty much toasted your lineup. Paul Menard, I think he started 13th. I don't know. Joey Logano starting 9th. That would have been an interesting play, but he just didn't. I don't wonder if he got into an issue or something. Jimmy Johnson starting 10th. He always wrecks this track anymore. Jimmy McMurray starting 8th. He always wrecks this track anymore. I don't know. I'm not going to look at the 2016 Fall Pocono race. It was fog shortened. I don't know what you're going to learn. I guess we could look at the hog points and see. Chris Buescher won. Regan Smith finished 3rd. Let's just look at the hog points. Even though, again, 2016 was kind of a different monster because you got Kevin Harvick driving a Chevy. Either way, Kevin Harvick scored 14 hog points in a shortened race. Kyle Larson, 10 hog points in a shortened race. Brad Keselowski, 7 in a shortened race. Okay, you can stop saying shortened race now. We get it. As I go through, that's all I've got on my list, at least top 20-wise. Managed to get 7 cautions in, though, in that short race. What a world. If I look back to 2016 spring, I just want to look at who had a good average running position, who was fast. Chase Elliott with the most hog points, scored the most points, but he finished 4th. Kurt Busch with 11 hog points. He finishes 1st. Matt Kenseth with 18.75 hog points. He finishes 7th. Dale Earnhardt Jr., 3 hog points, 6th place differential points. Flipping through here, do I see anything interesting? Keselowski, 5 hog points. Harvick, 11.25 hog points. I don't know, folks. You know, something interesting I guess we will look at is Indianapolis. Indianapolis races a lot like Pocono. It's got those long straightaways. The turns are not banked, and it's impossible to pass at. The initial thought is, well, what happened in the 2017 Indianapolis race? What can we glean from it? And the answer is absolutely nothing. Well, not that far. It's not absolutely nothing. But if you remember the Indianapolis race, it was a 9-hour-long race. It was supposed to start at 1. It got rain delayed, and they started it, and then all this crap happened. They kept wrecking. And eventually they got the race in with like 2 minutes to spare before they're going to have to call it because of darkness. What can I remember from it? Well, it was just an absolute crazy wreck fest. You could not pass. Once the race got going, you were fine. But what happened was people just got tired of it. And they realized the only time to pass is on these restarts. And they kept doing stupid stuff. The most famous of all was, and this was kind of an apocalyptic Daily Fantasy NASCAR moment where you wondered if it was ever going to happen, and it finally did. And it was, what would happen if the two best cars wrecked each other? Well, that was Indianapolis. You remember this race, Truex and Kyle Busch. Hey, no surprise, right? Truex, Kyle Busch, who was good at Pocono last year, who was good at everywhere last year. Well, they were the best cars at Indianapolis, and they were pretty much in control, and they would start on the front row, and they would kind of give way to each other every once in a while. They weren't going to fight each other over the lead. Like, all right, I'll let you lead this section of laps. Or, all right, you can have it. I'm not going to fight you into turn one. Now you can lead the next 20 to 30 laps. Well, it got to the point late in the race where, okay, Truex and Busch, they're not going to be so nice anymore. I know they're kind of allied together through JGR and the Toyotas, but it reached the point where, all right, we're not going to give. And the two idiots wrecked each other from the front row and destroyed every lineup. I mean, we're not talking about, not even like, you know, the people are smart. Like, I'm not going to go 100% Kyle Busch. I'm going to play it safe. I'm going to go about 50% Kyle Busch. I'll go about 50% Martin Truex Jr. Too bad. So sad. All of your lineups are dead. There it was. Apocalyptic moment. And the guy that won, I don't even know who. Here's your top scorers. Casey Kane, AJ Allmendinger, Matt Kenseth, Brad Keselowski. Now wait for it. The 5th most fantasy points, Matt DiBenedetto. The 6th most fantasy points at Indianapolis, mind you. This is not Daytona. This is not Talladega. Cole Whit. Guess who had the 7th most fantasy points? Running the 66 car for Carl Long, That's right. A Carl Long car finished on the lead lap. Timmy Hill, 53 fantasy points. You cannot learn anything studying this Indianapolis race. We have just wasted 5 minutes of your time. It was stupid wreck fest. It was out of control. And meanwhile, DiBenedetto and Witt and Hill just were in the back every time. And there was a pileup in the front. So then they just cruise through on the caution. And then they restart and they're in the back and they'd be a wreck. And then they're in the back. It's just over and over. What a world. I mean, even McDowell, Joey Gase, Landon Castle, and Greg Golding finished with top 20 fantasy scores. Wow. We can go back to the Indianapolis 2016 race. A little deep in the weeds here, but Kyle Busch with, wait for it, 61 hog points at Indianapolis. I believe they run 150 laps, 160 laps. I can't. He basically led every lap. He was good last year until that wreck with Truex. The year before that, he was stupid good. Started first, finished first. I believe he won the race in 2015 as well. It was a part of when he won three out of four races, or four races out of five in the summer. Started first, finished first. Kyle Busch, really good at these long straight stretch flat bank tracks. Kyle Busch is your number one guy going into Pocono this week. But before you go 100%, and we saw what happens when you go 100% last week at Coca-Cola 600. But hell, why not? Just throw in 100% of Kyle Busch in there. Have fun with it, folks. Oh, I hate Pocono. You wonder why this podcast came out so late. It's because I don't like this racetrack. There's nothing really I can tell you about this racetrack. I don't pay too much attention to this racetrack. I don't analyze this racetrack. It's a lap turner. The practice speeds don't necessarily correlate. And you know, I hate that practice. Well, I should be happy. We don't really have to pay attention to practice that much. Take back our lives. Starting position matters, but the cars that are good are the cars that are good. It's not really going to be any surprises. I don't know. I just haven't really set anything in stone. I wish I could have presented a better podcast for you, but I can't fake it, folks. Can't do it. Can't fake this stuff. Article will be out later this week. Cheat sheet will be out later this week. I will do my best. I don't know if I don't feel that confident about Pocono, but that's kind of a good thing because right now, I just feel like I've got to do a lot more research. I've got to do a lot more work this weekend. That's usually a good thing for me. There's some short tracks recently where I just felt really uncomfortable, and I just felt like I had to do more work than normal to really catch up. And it ended up working out and doing well. So it's probably a good thing that I'm on here and I'm willing to admit that, man, I just don't really have a strong feeling at Pocono besides the fact that Kyle Busch is really good and that starting position looks like it is a much bigger deal. I mean, obviously it's a bigger deal, but how much of a bigger deal? I don't know. I've got to do more research. What can I learn from practice? Do I have to look at practice a different way? Am I going to learn anything looking at five-lap runs? Maybe there's something hidden there in a five-lap run where I can see, hey, three, four laps in, five laps. I mean, typically we like to see fall off around 10 laps at another racetrack. Maybe we'll be able to see that on three laps in, four laps in, five laps in. Maybe it's more about asking, watching the interviews and driver feel. Obviously, really couldn't do that last year with the two-day show, with the qualifying and the race on the same day. It's hard to get interviews and racer information to make this big because I was rushing to get the cheat sheet. And guys, you've watched me do the Xfinity thing. It's hard for me to answer any questions between 11 a.m. and 1 p.m. on an Xfinity race day because I'm running my numbers and I'm going through stuff real quick and I'm trying to put together the cheat sheet and I'm trying to send it over to Rusty and hoping that I get it to him in time so that he can get it out to the people. It's just really tough to do. But, you know, I'm here admitting that I got to do more work because I am a little lost at the moment when it comes to Pocono, which means, unfortunately, at some point over the next couple days, I'm going to have to sit through a damn Pocono YouTube video. Not looking forward to that one bit. And maybe there's somebody out there that really likes the Pocono race. And to you, I'm not going to apologize. I'm going to tell you, Come on, man. Pocono. You know what they should do at Pocono is run the damn road course. They got a road course at Pocono. That would be awesome. Didn't happen. It did not happen. But you get the restrictor plate package on there maybe in the second Pocono race. That would be awesome. That would be good. Xfinity race is going to be, it should be exciting. I am really interested in seeing how the Xfinity race is going to shake out, or shape up, or shake out, or whatever you want to say. I need to look and see who is on the entry list. So we'll close out by looking at this Xfinity entry list. And the entry list that Jayski has printed is easily the worst entry list I've ever seen. It's like somebody took a picture of an entry list and then intentionally blurred it in spots. Anyway, so if we look through here, I think Cole Custer, he'll be fine. Garrett Smithley, who had a really good week last week, but also aided by a bunch of wrecks at the end. Still, Garrett Smithley's running these races. JD Motorsports, I mean, obviously, Ross Chastain is having a really good year, but Garrett Smithley's not having a bad year. Now, Vinny Miller is hot garbage. But Garrett Smith, I probably should have considered him a lot more last week, but there were other plays that I did not see Garrett Smithley finishing in the top 15. Sorry. Didn't see that one coming. Come on, it's 25th Lee. It's not 15th Lee. But you throw enough wrecks into that race. Thank you, Reddick. We appreciate that. You know, Majeski wrecked about 32 times, but none of them were his fault. That guy has got the worst luck. He looked pretty good. But, man, if somebody was wrecking, they were just magnetized towards Ty Majeski. And that last one when Ty Reddick took him out, man, it's like the guy can't catch a break. Cannot catch a break. Which is sad, too, because these guys like Ty Majeski, they need a break or they're not going to be in race cars much longer. Anyway, Elliott Sadler, Tift. Shane Lee is going to be in a three car. That's interesting. Why is RCR putting Shane Lee back in there? He looked fine at Bristol. Where else did we get to see Shane Lee? I think he was somewhere else. No, we got to see him at Talladega. Yeah, that doesn't really matter. Chastain, Annette, Allgaier, Tommy Joe Martin's back in the eight car. Maybe it's a possibility if he's cheap enough. They had a rough week last week. Tyler Reddick, you are probably going to finish the race this week after I've given him so much grief here. So I look through the list. Matt Mills is going to be back in the car. Count me out. No way do I want any Matt Mills in my life. Now, he's on the entry list now. It could be Joe Nemechek by the time Sunday rolls around. But, man, why would you put Matt Mills back in the car for Pocono? Last week would have been fine. Charlotte is a racetrack where it's typical intermediate track. He would have been fine there. Mills has had a hell of a time this year keeping his car on the racetrack and not wrecking. And now you're going to throw him out into a flat track, no banking in the turns, really just three completely separate different turns. Tough for someone who's never raced to go out there and do it. And then, oh, by the way, we're going to throw these plates on it. And we have no idea what's going to happen with the drafting that might work. I don't know. Not so good for Matt Mills. We got Kyle Busch in the 18 car, so we know who we're locking in there. Brandon Jones, if he's cheap. So we go through trying to see. Paul Menard is going to be in that 22 car. Now, that's where it gets really interesting. I wonder where they're going to price Paul Menard. We all know that the 22 car has been the best car in the Xfinity Series. Now, last week at Charlotte, the 22 car was not the best car. It was pretty good, and they had to wait until that bottom groove came in for Brad Keselowski to be the best car. So he had a lot of fall off early in the race when people were running the high line. But Kyle Busch doesn't pit there at the end or doesn't get caught in a wreck there at the end. Kyle Busch had the best car. He was the fastest. I don't care where the groove was. But he got stuck back in traffic and, you know, got way too aggressive on the first restart, starting on the inside line, putting on the grass. But still, the 22 car was pretty good, and Paul Menard should be fine. This is, remember, Paul Menard, he almost won at Indianapolis last year, I believe. Yeah, he finished second in Indianapolis to William Byron. He almost came back and got Byron there in this crazy package. That's interesting now that I think about it. So Paul Menard has experience. Well, one, he's won at Indianapolis in the Cup Series. In the Xfinity Series, he ran the Indianapolis race that used this restrictor plate package. So he knows how the car's going to suck up. He knows maybe how to make the runs or has at least has some experience. Two or three or seven, whatever this is. He's in the best car. Maybe you say Kyle Busch is the best car. Well, Paul Menard right there. it will be really interesting to see how the pricing works. And here's another thing I was thinking as I was doubting myself when Brad Keselowski lost the lead during that race and looked like, oh crap, they are sucking, what's going on? He was my favorite play. I probably needed more Kyle Busch than Brad Keselowski. What I was thinking to myself was, how much did the 22 car with crew chief Brian Wilson of Beach Boys fame, now he's doing NASCAR, which is a pretty good, I mean, it's a normal transition to go from like 60s boy band singing about surf rock and then kind of get into, you know, a hippie drug kind of fuel, you know, Pet Sounds is really good, and then just go into Xfinity Series, NASCAR. But how much did this team get hurt, at least feedback-wise? The last four races, there weren't any cup drivers in the 22 car. They had Austin Cindric, who just really isn't that good. How many steps backwards did they take with Austin Cindric's in the car? Cindric in the car. The 18 car looked like it moved forward. Ryan Preece gave him great feedback, probably. Gragson probably was pretty smart in that car. It looked like they improved with those guys in the car. Cindric, I don't think he helped them one bit. And I was thinking to myself, man, they are totally playing catch-up right now. They definitely are. Maybe they're back up to speed, but that's something to think about. You got Chase Elliott in the 23 car for GMS. The car wasn't bad last week. It's about where we thought. It's probably a top five at best. That's where Johnny Sauter was, and that's where Elliott was until I guess he missed a shift and blew the damn thing up. Dylan Lupton, I don't know. JGL's wrecking every single week. Let's see, who else do we got? Alex LeBay is on the entry list. I don't know what his health is at the moment. You got Yaley. I don't know if they'll even try to run it. He'll probably run half the laps and then be done. Ryan Sieg, never really won anything on that. Let me see if there's any other interesting guys. Oh, great. John Hunter Nemechek on the entry list. Man, he's here to ruin your day. I don't want to play him. Please don't make me play him. You got Josh Balicki in the 245 car. When did that become his number? Brandon Hightower is back for JP Motorsports in the 255 car. Did they accidentally put that 2 on there? What's the deal? I don't know. I'm all about three-digit cars. Let's just do it, folks. Bring it back. Chase Briscoe is going to jump into the 60 car, which is not the car that you want to be in. That's the one that Majeski always has the honor of crashing, or even at times Austin Cindric had the honor of crashing. Briscoe's best races have been when he was in that 95 or 96 car, which was aligned with Stuart Haas Racing. So, not a good car, but he might be able to make it work in this, you know, plate package. Grala's back in the 61. They were mighty impressive. Can't lie. Did not think that they were going to do what they did. So, I got to eat crow on that one. Very good performance by Kaz last week. Timmy Hill in the 66, Harmon, Boyd, McLeod, Shepard, Williams, Jeff Green. So Josh Williams back in the 90 car, which means he might be in the 36 car by the end of the race. Who knows what the hell is going to happen with that. So our interesting guys this week are going to be Paul Menard, Chase Elliott, Shane Lee. I would like to see what the price is, but I don't think they're going to give us any deals on him. Not a lot of laps, so the hog points isn't going to be such a big deal. Obviously, you're going to need the one guy who runs away with it, but you know, finishing position is everything. I don't need, I can probably get away with a lot of stuff. I can go cheap on certain things this week, maybe. I don't know. I want to see practice before I make any wild moves and see how this thing's really going to play out. All right, guys. Sorry if that was the worst podcast of the year. It's Pocono. It's going to be the worst race of the year. So figured I might as well match that level of awesomeness. Trip Life's fantastic.